One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You have millions of people who are a fan of you for exactly the thing that you were trying to conceal when you were younger.
When I started watching it, I was like, oh, I can't tell anyone about this.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Visit betterhelp.com/Padilla because sometimes existing is exhausting. And if you want to watch this episode completely ad-free, no sponsorship, completely uncensored, click the join button down below to support this channel. Anyway, hello, Connor.
Hi.
Or should I say C-Dog VA?
I prefer Connor.
Connor.
Well, C-Dog, because C-Dog sounds dumb.
C-Dog. What's up, C-Dog?
Oh, no. I'm so sorry. Why did I do this?
I've been seeing you pop up a lot more for doing charity streams. Like, you are raising a lot of money for charity. And again, that is such a shift from where you started. We'll get to that in a second. But these charity streams, you told me that you never intended to be a charity streamer.
No. Like, lately, people have been referring to me sometimes as, oh, it's the guy who does the charity stuff. And I'm like, that's weird, because I never thought of it as being...
Oh, there's a very giving man.
a very nice, giving man that everyone loves. No, because I had this, you had this connotation of that guy does too much charity stuff. You're like, what's his deal? What's he up to?
Oh, like they're hiding something?
Yeah. Basically, I started streaming, and I was wanting to do more fun events. And simultaneously, whilst I was looking to do more big events that kind of had more of a purpose. I befriended Iron Mouse, who you've interviewed on the show.
Yeah, Iron Mouse, she's amazing.
And she's one of my closest friends, and we work together a lot and do a lot of content together. And she has a condition that is CVID, which is,
what is it?
I'm so bad, I should know.
She's gonna be so pissed that you don't remember this.
Something variable immunodeficiency. Yeah. Basically, the TLDR is no weak or no immune system.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard of this before. It was completely foreign to me. And I wanted to learn more about it, and it was fascinating, but at the same time, it was very heartbreaking. And I wanted to do something to help a charity that helped her. And so it kind of just came full circle, and I harassed these charities that were very, they'll admit it, they were kind of like boomerish charities. Mm. And I was like, hey, I will give you $100,000 right now if you sign up to this thing. And then sure enough, I did a charity thing like a week later and raised, I think, $50,000. So I owed them a little bit of money. And then it kept kind of creeping up where I would kind of have these event ideas or these ideas to make video stream ideas. And it was like, it only really works if we have this charity event, which I'm more than happy to do. So we had the cyclothons, which were a lot of fun.
Yeah, where you cycled across Japan.
Yep.
You did it last year for what, 8 days straight?
Last year we did it for 8 days straight, and this year we did it for 9 days straight.
And last year you raised $320,000.
Yes.
This year over $500,000.
Yeah, which was crazy.
Was that 10 days this year?
It was 9 days this year.
Okay.
And maybe we'll do another one. I got to see if my legs can hold up.
You're willing to go through with that torture because
Absolutely.
It was for a good cause.
Yeah, it's for a good cause. It's fun, and people love watching it, and I need exercise, quite frankly.
True. And what better way than turning 9 days of constant exercise into content?
Oh, yeah, we also had a heart rate monitor and a Fitbit the entire time on the screen, so you can see my live calorie burn.
That's getting over 200 beats per minute. I think you need to take a quick break, sir.
I don't know how healthy it is to be over like 140 heart rate all day, but I think it was roughly like that, like yeah. for all day. I don't know what that does to you.
Growing up, were you always into like, did you imagine that you would ever like be doing such big charities and stuff like that?
No, fuck no. I'm British. We're like, we'll give £5 to this. Like, it's like, yeah, it's, we do like charity bake sales and stuff. Like, and I was never into it or anything.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to get video games. I don't have enough to help a charity. What the hell? Like,
yeah.
And I always tell people as well when they're watching and stuff, I'm like, hey, if you're a student or you're growing up, don't give anything. Just worry about yourself. Get yourself in a position where you can grow, you can be financially stable, so then you can start giving back.
Yeah, I feel like there is a percentage of the population when they see people doing charity streams, they just feel bad. They're like, I want to
help, yeah.
but I can't, or I'm not in a position to.
I don't think it's necessary. Just watching is a huge help.
Yeah.
Like being a part of that show and just watching it is worth so much, and you don't realize. So there's a lot of people who are like, I don't have enough money to pay for rent, but I want to give some money. I'm like, don't, what are you doing?
Like, don't, you're like, what are you doing? Rent.
Pay your goddamn rent. Like, are you insane? Like
yeah.
be financially stable. And I like to think that in life that we're so fortunate that a lot of people are very generous and help us along the way. And I think it's very important that when you are financially stable, to give back and to make sure there is something that you're always doing to kind of, you know, make sure other people can also get to that position that you're in, hopefully, or just have a better quality of life. I think that's only something I came to appreciate as I got older, which obviously happens, which is unfortunate because when you're like 20, you're like, I just want to have fun. I want to be able to buy things that I want and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as I'm getting a little older and I'm becoming more financially stable, thank you, YouTube, you know, it's something I've been more considerate about.
What was your life like growing up?
I think I have a pretty normal upbringing. I don't know. It's
but
so
you had a Wales upbringing, right?
Yeah, so I'm from Wales. Which do you know where Wales is on the map?
Near the UK-ish.
It is. Technically, it's in the UK.
Oh, shit.
And yeah, so I grew up in Wales, and I went to a Welsh school, which means that I would speak Welsh all the time.
Does it sound like... It doesn't really sound like English, does it?
It's completely separated from English.
Yeah, it doesn't sound anything like it.
It's. What do you want me to say? I have the party trick where I say the really long town name. You
say
know
it.
All right, it's. Yeah.
That kind of sounds like a drunk person speaking English.
Yeah. A lot of people call it the mashing the keyboard language.
Yeah. Who fucking made that? Were they trying to mess with people?
It was a publicity stunt. And it worked.
Oh, really?
I was talking about it. Yeah, it was a publicity stunt. So I went to Wales and we did all that kind of stuff. And it was just very small. Like my graduating class when I left was like 20.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really small.
So everyone knew each other.
Everyone slept with each other. Everyone knows everything. And so it's really embarrassing. You're like, if you kiss someone, it's like everyone would know. And then everyone's parents would know.
Mm.
And then my parents would find out stuff from other people's parents. I'm like, I don't tell my parents stuff. Why are you telling your parents stuff about some embarrassing stuff that happened? So it's really small, but very friendly. But sometimes you kind of feel like the small town mentality is kind of like, You kind of don't gel with it sometimes when you want to, you know, when you kind of want to do more stuff outside of the norm. I mean, growing up, I think I really envied the fact that I wanted to be more creative, but I was very much kind of in that point where I just didn't know how to be because it was never kind of taught how to be creative or how to kind of follow through with that and express that.
Well, also, it sounds like from what you told me, like people really try to make people like stay where they are. Like
that's like British culture in general.
Though. Oh, okay. So like standing out is
absolutely
not a cool thing to do.
Hell no, God no. Like I was really into video games. I played a lot of video games.
And it was not considered cool there?
That's crazy to me. Yeah, I got bullied for playing video games, which boo me, everyone got bullied, yada yada yada. It's my villain arc now.
Yeah. Wait, well how did you get bullied though?
I remember distinctly there was this one guy who's obsessed with like spitting on people. And it's the most disgusting
thing. What the fuck?
He would just go around and he would just spit on you. And I was like,
what?
Yeah, it's so vile. And now, especially after we've had the pandemic, we're like,
that's disgusting.
Yeah, and then maybe you would like, you know, you'd be doing like, it'd be football or rugby day or whatever.
Yeah.
And they would on purpose try and take you down in like a way that was absolutely meant to harm you.
Because you were someone who played video games and was it because you were also into like anime and cartoons and all that
stuff?
Well,
I found anime when I was like 15, 16. When I started watching it, I was like, oh, I can't tell anyone about this.
Yeah. It was like shameful because some people was like...
Still kind of is.
I mean, some people thought that all anime was hentai.
That was what the impression was in my school and... I was trying to, I told one or two of my close friends, very like, I kind of was like, guys, listen, I have a secret to tell you. I watch this anime called Death Note, and it's sick. It's not porn. I promise it's not porn.
Yeah.
And I kind of told them, I was like, I like this anime. You should definitely go check it out. And they thought I was so dumb. Even though they were like my closest friends, they're like, we don't watch cartoons. We play Call of Duty, Connor. Come on, what are we doing here? And so I kind of was like, okay, I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to tell anyone about this ever again.
So you kind of, you concealed your identity and your interests. Mm. And that's partially what you were bullied for, was your identity and your interests, which is so interesting because now you have millions of people who are a fan of you for exactly the thing that you were trying to conceal when you were younger.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I got into doing a lot of the stuff, was that I think when you just become a fan of anime or whatever it is, that whatever niche hobby you have, you want to have friends who have similar kind of interests in any way.
They won't spit on you for liking anime.
They won't spit on you. They'll talk about it. They'll be excited about it. And it's well and good. My friends are great that I had. But it is nice when you can talk about something that you're very passionate about and someone else is also just kind of lights up. And they're so like, I love that. So I went on like my anime list. And I would just like message people, I'd be like, "Hey, you want to chat? And no one would fucking talk to me because I was just some guy on my anime list messaging people, being like, "Hey, man, I'd love to talk about anime if you want to." And of course, everyone fucking no way. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't make friends. And I was like, "Oh well, I guess I'll give up on making friends." And I was like 16 at the time, trying to make some anime friends. And around the same time, I had kind of gotten into this idea of doing voice acting. I was like, "Huh, this is really cool." I think it kind of was absolutely some kind of escapism for me. It was like, I can be these characters in a really cringy way and kind of escape through them.
Yeah, you can kind of live the mentality of these characters.
Absolutely. For a moment, I could pretend I was Light from Death Note or Ryuk or something crazy. You know what I mean? I started doing voice acting with a really crappy Turtle Beach headset that I used to play COD on.
Just directly on it?
Yeah, I would literally just like have a blanket over my head and I would talk. It sounded so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just obsessed with doing it, and I voiced a bunch of fan projects, kind of like Newgrounds. Anyone would be like, "Hi, I want to do a parody of Pokemon," and then I would just scream being Charizard or something, some dumb stuff.
Yeah.
But it was all kind of like building up to like, learning little techniques, and maybe you would talk with someone who was kind of a bit more on in their journey, and they were a bit more talented, and they'd put in a lot more hours. And you kind of talk and you learn a bit of advice from them. And around the same time, I started doing YouTube because I was getting really tired about doing voice acting and auditioning, because I don't know if you've done much auditions and stuff for stuff, but it's
tough because you give it your all. You spend hours and hours preparing, you give it your all, and then you never hear back. And that happens over and over and over and over again, which is just the way it is.
It's how it is. And everyone has to go through it. It doesn't matter who you are, you have to audition. And I was just kind of getting frustrated because I had my university happening and I was kind of like wasting a lot of time doing these auditions that I knew I wasn't going to get, but I was kind of trying for them anyway, just because I felt like I had to. And so I was like, I'm just going to start making some stuff that's for me, that I can use my voice acting more and I can express my creativity. And so I started doing the YouTube videos.
So you're like, if this career doesn't exist, if it's not coming toward me, I'm going to make it.
Yeah, I'm going to start making stuff. I don't know who for.
Yeah.
I had no plan. I didn't know where it was going. I was like, I think this will be fun. I'll just make it.
So is that when you launched your channel with doing some impressions and some prank phone calls and stuff?
That was when I released, I think in June, which is kind of when I consider my start. It's like June 2015, I released Sebastian Prank Calls, which is a character from Black Butler, which is this kind of very shoujo anime that's kind of like very appealing towards teenage girls.
You're like a heartthrob.
Exactly. I was being this butler who sounds extremely British.
What does he sound like?
Yes, his name is Sebastian. He would talk like this, and he would always say, "I'm simply one hell of a butler," and stuff like that. And so I would just call up, and I'm actually good friends with the real voice actor now.
You made some videos with him.
He's great. Yeah, he's great. But I, for so long, I was so worried because I was making these videos impersonating him, essentially.
Yeah.
And I know that some of the other anime voice actors were being impersonated on some other stuff, and they were not happy about it. And I was like, man, I hope he isn't pissed about it.
Were you making him say fucked up shit?
Absolutely, yeah. I was saying, this character was saying horrible stuff.
Yeah.
And because the prank calls, I was like calling up like the Mormon church and like telling them I wanted to burn down an orphanage for whatever reason. I don't know why. It's not funny. Not funny. It was 8 years ago, okay? I've learned.
The internet was a very different place.
Very different. Very different. I just thought it was funny if I was like, oh, I suppose I have this urge to burn an orphanage. It made sense in the show canon. Trust me. It's dumb. Yeah, it's so
right,
dumb.
Right.
And I would call these things, these places, and the first video right away, I really wanted it to do well because I really thought it was funny, as does everyone think their first videos are funny.
Sure.
yeah, sure. Yeah. So I started messaging these Black Butler like fan pages on Facebook, which is a thing back in the day. Facebook fan pages were everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd have like 100,000 followers or 200,000. And I emailed them, I messaged them, I was like, hey, if you share this video, I'll send you voice recordings, like the character, whatever you want. Mm. And then all of them ignored me, except for like two of them, which shared it. I think back in the day, the way YouTube worked, having that big kick right away was enough to kind of put
it. Oh yeah, and if you had a video that got posted on Facebook and people from Facebook were clicking on it and going to the video, then YouTube would reward that as outside traffic coming in. This video needs to get pushed more because then we get more external viewers coming in.
And it was crazy watching it go up. I was like, whoa. And so I think in like the first week, you got like 10,000. By the end of the month, it had 100,000 views, which at that time was also like crazy numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like blown away. I was like, oh my God, I got to make another video right now. Mm. So I was like, I'm going to capitalize on
this. So
then
you became the Black Butler voice impersonator prank
call man.
Yeah, that's
all I did. Yeah, that's all I did. So then I realized prank calls are tough. And so I was like, hey, viewers, if you want to get a call from me, send me a number, which sounds really weird and kind of bad now.
You just give them a call on their phone.
I had like, yeah, I literally just, I had like Skype credit and I would just call them up from an unknown number.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would be flustered, or sometimes they would give me their home phones. So the parents would pick up and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Hello, can I speak to your daughter, please?
Yeah, yeah. I was like some weird British guy. You're like, I'm a demon. I'd love to speak to your kid. That's so bad. It's so many red flags. It's so bad. And I would kind of mash these all together into like these kind of like fast cuts of fun little conversations. And people would like it. And I would kind of do it. And I did that for a very long time. Like a year, I think, I did just that.
Mm-hmm. And then you started moving away from that because you're like, I don't want to just be the Black Butler impersonator prank call guy.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I think a lot of YouTubers get into where they get like stuck in a type of content and it's really hard to move away from it.
Yeah, when your entire audience expects that from you and you're like, if I pivot, if I try something different, I'm going to disappoint a lot of people or I'm going to lose a lot or my views are going to be down. And the way that YouTube shows you your stats, it's like, this video was number 1 out of 10. It's your best ever. And you're like, oh,
thank
wow,
God
but
I hated
making it. And then you're like, I'm going to try something new. And it's like 10 out of 10. This is your worst video of the past. And you're like, oh, in a weird sense.
You can't win.
In a weird sense, YouTube with this statistic that they show, it's encouraging you to do exactly what you already did and keep doing that.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of YouTubers, especially, you know, when you're young, you don't think about what's the strategy, what's the end goal.
You're
just like, I want to keep making the things that are fun. And right now, those videos were fun. And then as I realized, you know, I started making like 20, 30 bucks from these videos, which was crazy. I was like, whoa. You know, I really wanted to make sure that I could keep doing this for a long time. And to do that, I was like, this needs to be fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wanted to find a way to branch away from doing just anime impressions. And you know, for a long time, I was trying to think of ways to get people off of this one character I was doing. And so I started introducing a bunch of other characters. But then I realized, well, I'm kind of putting a Band-Aid on a solution which was the problem, I didn't want to do the impersonation stuff.
So then you're like, I'll do different impersonation stuff.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, well, then I started making some really weird videos where I would do like characters playing games. And I was like, this is too cringe for me. I can't do this.
Mm.
And then I started sprinkling in videos where they were more focused on like, maybe there was some anime focus or these characters were in the focus, but I was also in the video physically.
You eventually transitioned away from that entirely.
Yeah, I still kind of focus a little bit on anime, kind of like otaku kind of culture stuff is what I best described it.
Mm.
It was like there's always some kind of anime in the background or some kind of hint to it or nod to it, or the humor appeal to anime fans. But it was always me doing dumb stuff. Like maybe I would just go on like Fiverr and hire them to make anime stuff. And it was kind of like transitioning it again into that kind of new type of YouTube style, whilst also keeping like the old fans kind of a little bit interested, but trying to gain new viewers at the same time. And then this is where I'd been doing voice acting for a little time, well, not a little time, like quite a long time at this point, and I'd been doing professional work, and I felt confident about talking about voice acting from more of a professional angle. One big series I had for a little while was you know those Wired shows where they would have like the professional?
Yeah.
I literally just stole their thumbnail and I did it as me and talking about voice acting.
Right.
And that did really well for a while. People loved those. And I was kind of finding a lot more interesting ways into integrating voice acting into the content more. And that was really, really fun for a while. Like I would dub over anime and fix bad anime that people perceived as bad. And I would be like, is it actually bad? Or is the writing bad? Or is the pacing bad? Like, let's actually like talk about what's bad here. And that was all really rewarding and fun. And then I kind of moved to Japan. That was the thing where it all changed.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Oh, by the way, this episode is sponsored by Rocket Money. Most people think that they're spending around $80 a month on subscriptions when it's actually closer to $200. And yes, I am one of those people who realized that they were being double charged for things and charged for things that I had no idea I had even signed up for. Like, I guess I did sign up for Spotify under two email addresses and I was getting double charged. But that's in hindsight. I don't dwell on the past. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spendings, and helps you lower your bills all in one place. With Rocket Money, you can easily cancel your subscriptions that you don't want with just the press of a button. No more long hold times or annoying emails with customer service, because Rocket Money does all of the work for you. Rocket Money can even help negotiate to lower your bills by up to 20%. All you have to do is take a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Stop wasting money on things that you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and manage your money the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/Padilla. That's rocketmoney.com/Padilla. I will only say this one more time. It's rocketmoney.com/Padilla. Anyway, back to Connor.
You moving to Japan does feel like the moment when everything started kind of hitting the ground running.
Massively. It was like if the graph was like this.
Yeah.
And I've never really had a massive blow up from one thing, like I think a lot of creators did. It was always very steady, but then the incline of the steadiness got very like steep. And I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting now.
It was offered to you, right? Someone said, do you want to move to Japan?
Yeah, Maylene, who's a good friend of ours and our boss now, had pitched to some higher ups in a big Japanese conglomeration about making a company filled with YouTubers that you bring to Japan, promoting anime stuff and promoting Japanese products and stuff. And so she was just like, hey, do you want to move to Japan? And at this time I knew, like, I thought nothing of it. And I didn't think that, I didn't know any Japanese or anything.
Yeah, because you just watched the American dubs?
I watched English dubs and I watched subs as well, but in the anime community at that time, people who like expressed that they were super into Japan and spoke Japanese, it was like, oh, you're so cringe.
So it was cringy to be
so
too...
Cringy. Yeah, it's like, what are you... I'm not one of those fans.
Even when a weeb that would get teased would make fun of the other weebs who were more weeby.
Absolutely, yeah, there was hierarchies of it.
Yeah.
And I... Ultimately, I regretted that because I'm so envious of those people again. And it stemmed from, again, it's so weird because I was mentioning how it was tough to feel that I could express myself in the UK, and then here I am doing the exact same thing to other anime fans who were interested in Japanese culture, learning Japanese, and I felt kind of self-conscious by the fact that they were willing to push themselves and learn a language.
And well, I feel like that gives you perspective of why people were bullying you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And then, I never made fun of these people to their face or anything like that, but I always used to think, like, in my head, I was like, I'm not like that. I'm one of the cool anime fans.
I'm one of the cool nerds.
Yeah, I'm functional in society, okay? The next step for me was that I really wanted to have a big evolution of kind of, like, being more out there in the, like, on location, interacting with people, finding cool things to document and kind of get involved with, and utilizing my strength, which was that I think I was, I could withstand cringe to agree that I think other people couldn't.
Like being the center of the cringe.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't mind doing that.
Because you kind of transitioned to Englishman in Japan.
Fish out of water
style.
Yeah, yeah. And that was great.
What was the first video that you shot there?
Like, went to the Yaoi Cafe.
Right, which is
Boys Lea. Yeah. Yaoi is like, oh, it's almost the Western term, actually, because in Japan they use the word boys love for it.
Oh.
Which kind of tells you all about it.
I wouldn't even ask any questions about what that meant if you just said boys love.
It's Boys Love Cafe. But
okay.
It's always really weird because it's like they're not, it's like a fetishized version of gay romance, and it's not for
gay.
So it's
not gay, it's just a gay fetish.
It's kind of, yeah, and it's mainly for, it was mainly in Japan, it's mainly targeted at women.
Oh, it's for like women into watching.
Yes.
Boys together.
Yes, yes. And so all this cafe, all the demographic that goes there is women.
Oh.
And so it's kind of, and it's very odd.
It's Well, you did the Pocky game with one of the boys.
I did. Yeah. And I actually recently went back there to kind of like, after having more experience almost, because when I was filming that video, I was kind of sitting back a little bit. I didn't get too much involved. I got a lot more involved this time.
You know more Japanese. You know more about the culture.
Yeah,
You are used to making an ass out of yourself on camera.
Absolutely. And so I went into it 100%. And it's kind of a fun video because I kind of worked there and I interacted with them and did some of the scenes, which was really pushing me on the how much cringe I can withstand.
I feel like part of the reason that you were able to grow an audience that was so supportive of you just being you is through these videos where you were completely just like fish out of water. Like,
yeah.
I am going to experience these things firsthand without judgment. It was more
absolutely,
like you
yeah.
were experiencing it from curiosity.
When you bring a camera somewhere and you talk with someone, it is absolutely your job to put that person at ease and kind of be like, this, me and this camera is not a threat. We're not here to exploit you or make you look bad or smear you in any way. It's, I just want to know about you, whoever this person is, it's their story. They have an interesting life. And I, you know, especially when we're in Japan and there's so much respect and courtesy in the culture, it's so much about showing these people right away that like they probably feel that from a normal person's perspective that like what they do is unusual. And it's my job to be like, hell no, like, let's do it.
Doing that helped lead you to gaining more and more success, and more people being on board with you as a personality, not just for the voice impressions. And then you started the Trash Taste podcast.
We did, yeah. We started that during the pandemic. And that is when I kind of noticed the biggest change that I've ever seen on YouTube for me. That was like a huge, huge change. I mean, because, you know, right away, it was getting like a million views.
Yeah.
For a two-hour podcast, which is just insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
At the time, I don't think there was any other podcasts that were getting that consistently.
Yeah,
like
not
every
consistently.
Every single episode.
And for that long of a video, too.
Yeah, and it was just weird, because it was like, what's special about this? It was like, oh, it's just three dudes who like anime, who just talk about weird shit. And,
so you couldn't even put a finger on what it was that made it so popular?
It was during the pandemic. I think we were genuine friends, and that really helped have the conversation be solid. And I think we'd all had some experience doing podcasts, so we all came into it with a bit of experience on how to let each other talk and how to pace it. And I think we all just genuinely were excited to hang out with each other. And we were in person during the pandemic, which was a big, big thing. And so I think it was just a perfect storm of things that came together. And people loved it. And then we really tried our best to hopefully make it a big thing, and it became a huge thing.
Have there been any unexpected side effects of blowing up?
I feel like I don't get a lot of them because I'm just in Japan. Like, I just, my day to day is so boring and
You don't have a SWAT team show up to your house every single time that you stream?
They'd have to like, one, find my address, be able to understand what that address is in like an English context, call up the Japanese SWAT team, which no, I don't even think they'd show up. Think they'd be like, he's a what?
Yeah.
Nah, no way. So I'm not worried about anything like that. So it's like a lot of the big worries that a lot of my friends have, I just don't have to worry about. And
they're not necessarily streamer problems, they're American problems.
Absolutely. They are American problems. And they're like, oh, you know, sometimes I'll be like, man, everyone's so fake here or something. And I'm like, well, I'm not here. Like, I don't have to deal with that. I'm just hanging out with the friends I like in Japan. And maybe I come here to LA and I hang out with everyone I like to see. And it's kind of nice having that kind of separation where it's like, when I go to Japan, I feel like it's just me and my good group of friends and I can just focus on doing what I like. And I haven't really had too many downsides other than being busy. And it is kind of tough sometimes managing the friends and hanging out with friends and work-life balance, even though I told you I'm trying to, because I genuinely love working and I love doing what I do and I'm extremely passionate about it. And I feel blessed that what I do now is probably some of the most passionate stuff that I feel so strongly about.
Has your self-worth ever been attached to your success or your numbers or your, you know, the way people perceive you?
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is. I try to say that it isn't and I try to say that it wouldn't, but I can realize that I'm doing well right now. And it's super easy to think that I don't care about it because everything's doing well, right? And so I definitely know if it ever were to go down, I would definitely be like, oh. But I also think that I'm mentally well enough and stable enough to be able to recognize maybe when I'm attaching too much worth to something and be able to like say, hey, why do I think that way? Why do I look at it that way?
Right, you're not worried about the fall off or you're not like, I'm on top of the world, so therefore the fall is gonna be so far or anything like that?
I hope not. I mean, I'm just trying to do me. I'm trying to make things I like.
That's the best way to approach it. I think some people get so caught up in like, I'm doing really well. That means that
it's gonna
like I'm just grasping to like barely keep this success here, but it's gonna eventually crumble. I think that if you are able to approach your success from a perspective of knowing that there are always ups, always
you
downs.
Have to be ready for the ups and downs.
You have to be fine knowing that this drop isn't going to be forever in the same way that the success isn't going to be forever.
Yeah, it's waves, ups and downs. It's what it is. You just got to ride it and hope that, have faith in what you're doing and the content you're putting out there or whatever you're throwing out to the world is meaningful.
I also just haven't checked like YouTube analytics in so long. I became so much happier when I stopped.
Yeah, numbers?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think that, you know, when you're living off of it, and it really was like a day by day thing where I'm like, I need money to live. I was, you know, I was really caught up on it, and it's this dangerous cycle sometimes. I think when, you know, I've had friends who were doing this, who maybe got caught up making the same things that wasn't doing too well, but they felt like they were trapped and they really wanted to keep doing it, but they just the money just wasn't there anymore. And I think that's when it would be scariest, looking at the analytics, just seeing it go down.
But then your mind becomes so filled with worry and you're like trying to problem solve that how much of your brain power is left over for being creative and doing the things that you know you sought.
You want to do, right?
Yeah.
And so I just stopped caring a while back, like a year or two ago. And I was like, wow, I'm just so happier when I don't check it first thing in the morning. I genuinely became a lot happier. Maybe I care too little sometimes, maybe I should care a little bit more. But I have faith in what I do and that what I do is fun and that people will want to come out for it. And I just feel so lucky that that's where I'm at right now.
Well, what are you looking forward to most?
Well, we just did the charity event.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, at least for now, that's where I'm kind of hooked on, is doing really big, fun events and kind of hosting and being in that seat of just bringing a lot of people together and making these cool events where we do some crazy stuff. And I'm just so passionate about doing all that stuff. And it feels good. It feels good to make stuff that I just feel good about.
Yeah.
And that there's not a day that goes by where I'm not excited for the next thing that I'm doing.
And you get to see the reactions from people who are affected by it in the same, like they, in a sense, some people are absorbing the excitement that you feel and feeling that themselves.
But I'm having a lot of fun with it right now. And I feel like I'm at like the happiest I've ever been with YouTube right now. Yeah, these chairs are so comfortable, by the way.
Thank you.
I realized I was slouching. And I'm like,
they're so comfortable. I've had people be like, those are the most uncomfortable looking chairs in the world. I'm like, bitch, sit in it and see how long you want to sit. You will not want to leave. There's a perfect butt print in mine because I sit in it when I don't need to because it's my safe place.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.